I'd like to thank Rabbi Cohen and Shalita for giving me the opportunity to be part of this wonderful get-together. And I have, I guess you might call it an easier assignment than a Rav Shechter Shalita. I guess it should be that way. Because I'm not sure if any of you have seen the syllabus which Rabbi Cohen sent me. My shiur is entitled Treatment of Illness and Injuries on Shabbos, which is basically a description of the laws of Chola She'ein Bo. I'd like to thank Rabbi Cohen and Shalita for giving me the opportunity to be part of this wonderful get-together. And I have, I guess you might call it an easier assignment than a Rav Shechter Shalita. I guess it should be that way. Because I'm not sure if any of you have seen the syllabus which Rabbi Cohen sent me. My shiur is entitled Treatment of Illness and Injuries on Shabbos, which is basically a description of the laws of Chola She'ein Bo Sakana, which means I'm the stakes are lower in my presentation, and I'm leaving the hard questions for Rav Shechter Shalita, who was supposed to speak about the halachas of Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos, where life is on the line. Nonetheless, given this disclaimer, it is important to note that the halachas which I will be dealing with are extremely common, perhaps more common, I would guess more common, because we're dealing with what we call categories of which fall short of Pikuach Nefesh proper, of Sakonas Nefeshes. And I imagine statistically that these kinds of situations, being less severe, less drastic, are likely more common, and therefore we have to know how to deal with them properly. My first, again, I'm following the order of Rabbi Cohen's syllabus. I'm not sure if it's publicly available, but this is the order I will be going in. First, categories of illness and their halachos. And I'm asked to speak about cholish, einba, sakana, sakana's aver, mechush, bialma. There are different levels, even after you fall short of the highest level, the level of literally cholish, yesh, bo, sakana, when life is in danger. Nonetheless, there are more than one level as we go down. The next level down is what was referred to as sakana's aver, where not the life is that not in danger, but a limb is in danger. There are actually certain authorities who maintain the danger to a limb may be almost equivalent, or perhaps even equivalent in some cases, to danger to life. The Shulchan Aruch views this as an incorrect position and considers danger to a limb to be a step below, a significant step below, danger to one's life. Going down, we have a category called Chole She'ein Bo Sakana. You have to qualify for that too. It's not an automatic. You have to qualify to be called the Chole She'ein Bo Sakana. And briefly, the qualifications for Chole She'ein Bo Sakana, the Shulchan Aruch calls it Nafal LeMishkav, someone who has to be in bed. But what it really means is someone who's not able to function in a normal fashion. And we shall see the different subcategories of this. That's the next step down. Then there's a concept called mechush ba'alma, which is found in the Sfarim, in the Shulchan Aruch. Mechush ba'alma means a mere, ba'alma means merely. He merely is some kind of a pain. Mechush ba'alma. I'd like to begin my discussion today by arguing with somebody. That's what wake everybody up, a little bit controversy. And the person I'm arguing with is one of the great mechaberim of our time, a great tzaddik, who I happen to know personally, aside from his svarim, I know him on a personal level, a tremendous onov and tzaddik, and his name is Rav Neuwirth Shalita, lives in Beit Vegan, wrote the classical work, Shmiras Shabbos Kilchosa, now in its second edition, which is already almost 25 years old. This is actually spawned a whole genre, a whole type of ceremony with the big letters on top and the footnotes on the bottom. And he was almost probably the pioneer in introducing this kind of a sefer into the classic Torah literature. It's been copied 100 times or more by recent mechaberim. And he has quite a number of chapters on Chole. Actually, the last 10 chapters of the work, there are 41 chapters. The last 10 which is a significant percentage, deal with various issues relating to sakana. Lamed Beis is called a sheyesh b'sakana, that I leave for Rav Shech. But from Lamed Gimel on, relate to our discussion, and we'll be covering some of the highlights, I would say, from Perek Lamed Gimel through Perek Lamed Ches, what we'll be discussing today. Okay, that's quite 50 pages. We're not going to do it all, but we'll just a few highlights. So in Perek Lamed Dalet, entitled Mechushim Dash Miktas Choli. Now, what he's done here, Rav Neuwirth, I'm not faulting him. This is what's traditionally understood. Is he made yet another category? Let's get Chola Sheyesh Bo Sakana, then Chola Sheein Bo Sakana. Okay, that's someone who's in bed. Then, no, that's something else. Chola Sheyesh Bo Sakana. Then Sakana's Eiver. Deja to limb. Then Chola Sheein Bo Sakana. And he has now two additional categories. Two additional categories. What are they? What he calls Miktas Choli. I'm sorry, I forgot to make the announcements. Please turn off the cell phones. Okay. Miktas Choli, which means there's a little bit of illness. And then finally, the lowest level he calls Mechosh B'Yalma. It's very difficult to be so precise. In other words, we can understand your life is in danger, your limb is in danger, you're in bed or some equivalent, and less than that. But to divide the less than that into two additional categories, that's already stretching it. And as a matter of fact, the Rav Neuwirth in his first footnote in Perek Lamed Dalet tells us that there's no distinction between what we call Mechush, the lowest level, and we call Miktas Choli, one level above, with one exception, only one difference, and that is Legabe Nochri, with respect to allowing or telling a non-Jew to help you out on Shabbos. That for Michushim, for simple pain, it's prohibited, and he gives you chapter and verse. And with respect to Miktas Choli, which is a cut above, it is permissible, and again gives you chapter and verse. This is Rav Neuwirth's divisions. He has now actually five levels. And I want to start with a quibble, as with all due respect to the Shemir Shabbos Kilchasa, and not only his sefer, but his person. I would like to suggest that there are only four levels. Yesh bo sakana, sakana's ever, ein bo sakana, and what I'll call mechush bi'alma, the lowest level, a mere ache or pain. But you'll ask me a question, there's a distinction between mechush bi'alma and miktas choli as far as asking a non-Jew to do malacha for you. The answer is, this is one of my fundamental points for this morning's presentation, is that it's not correct. But we have to make the following distinction. This is a very important distinction. There are two problems which we deal with whenever we're discussing what may or may not be done for a chola on Shabbos. One is, we know there are 39 categories of work. We all know this is Hilchos Shabbos, the 39 categories, and we have to be mindful of them on all different levels, on the Torah level, on a rabbinic level. This is the actual categories of work which apply to those who are sick, to those who are not sick. It's the general Hilchos Shabbos. However, we must be mindful, this is my main topic really for today, my part of the discussion, that the Chazal introduced a separate gzeira, a gzeiras refuah. The Chachamim prohibited certain activities which, were it not for this rabbinical prohibition, would have actually been permissible. Let me explain where I'm coming from. You're not allowed to drive a car on Shabbos. May you drive a car to prevent someone from a situation of illness? So we have to discuss the various five kinds, the five levels, and the bottom line is you can only drive a car for yourself, for the highest level, the level of Chola Sheyesh Bo Sakana, where life is in danger. Then now, may you drive a car, but you must drive. That Rabbi Shechtel will be discussing in the second shiur. However, there were certain situations where the Chazal prohibited activities which, were it not for this new gzera, Mishim Refuah, would have been permissible. So the fact that your health is on the line makes things better, allowing you, mandating that you drive a car to save someone's life, but it could also make things worse. There may be certain activities which intrinsically would be permissible, yet the rabbis prohibited doing these things precisely because someone is sick sounds counterintuitive. But Chazal knew exactly what they spoke, and the Gemara has it in Masechta Shabbos, and it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. It's a gzeira mishum shechikas samimonim. The Chazal made a gzeira. They fear that if, take an example, if a person will take pills, medicines, so the Chazal instituted a prohibition in certain instances against taking medicines. What's wrong with medicine? It sounds it's very innocuous. What's wrong with taking medicine? You're right, it is innocuous. By Torah law, it's permissible. By original rabbinic law, it would be permissible. But the Chazal made it a gzera. They were fearful that if I take medicine on Shabbos, next Shabbos I will want the medicine, I won't have the medicine. Next thing you know, I'll grind up the medicine. Because remember, medicines are ground. And therefore, if I grind the medicines, I'll be in violation of a Torah prohibition known as tochein, grinding, one of the 39 categories of work. Hence, the rabbis instituted a rabbinical enactment, a prohibition, a gzera, mishum shechikas samimonim. Now, if you look carefully in the sources that are cited here in Shmir Shabbos Kolchos Perek Lamed Dalet, Ha'ara Aleph, the first footnote, you will discern this distinction. Namely, that in the case in which we say that you may ask a non-Jew to do a rabbinical prohibition, it's called the Shvus to Shvus. We have a klal, you may know about it, a rule. Shvus to Shvus is mutter b'moko mitzvah. You may tell a non-Jew to do something which even if you did it yourself, it's only rabbinic. So it's twice rabbinic. Once because the non-Jew is doing it instead of the Jew. And two, even if the Jew did it, it's rabbinic. So it's double rabbinic squared, medrabbanan squared, shvus to shvus. This step is permissible, b'mokom mitzvah, b'mokom tzorech, b'mokom hefsed meruba. And one of these things is a mechush, or what's called mikzas choli. You don't feel well. Your well-being is certainly something very important and enables us to allow a non-Jew to do something which if we ourselves did it, would be medrabbanan. That's the case which is the permissible case. The prohibited case, which Rav Norvid quotes, is a case regarding taking medicines. So he said, you're not allowed to ask a goy to assist you in certain medicinal activities, even in a case where you have a mechush. So Rav Norvid drew the distinction between mechush, which is prohibited, and mikzas choli, which is permissible. I would humbly disagree and say the distinction is in a different place. There's no difference between mechush and mikzas choli. It's one and the same thing. Once you're not on the level of Chol HaShem HaSakon, there's only one level beneath that. Something bothers you. You haven't risen to the level where you're in bed or the equivalent. It's all the same. Mechush, Mitzvah, Schor, they're synonymous. They're identical. So why then may we tell a non-Jew to do this particular rabbinical act and not that rabbinical act? Here's the answer. If it's a matter of a Melacha Derabbanan, then it's permissible. Shvus to Shvus is mutter for a mitzvah, for a choli, for a hefseh. This fits right into that category. However, if what's being done is medicinal in nature, then although the non-Jew is doing it, the non-Jew is putting some cream on me, the non-Jew is causing me to ingest a pill, I don't know if that can be done, that can be considered the action of a non-Jew. But whatever the non-Jew is doing, which has some kind of a medicinal nature, the Isur Malacha is not just an Isur Malacha which would exist in general terms in Ilchus Shabbos, but rather it's a specific rabbinical prohibition which relates to the applying of medical care on Shabbos. This paradoxically is more strict in this regard. Why? Simple. The non-Jew will do it for me this Shabbos. And next Shabbos, when A, I don't have any medicines, and B, I don't have any non-Jew, I'll do it myself. So here's an irony where a gzera, a rabbinical prohibition, don't do A lest you do B, is even more strict than what we'll call a malacha derabbanan, which normally is more severe, which the rabbi said, don't do this, and it's just not a doraisa because it's discounted for some technical reason or other. So let me just repeat one more time. In my view, I'm making life a little bit easier. And instead of having to discriminate, what's the difference between the mechush and the mikzas choli, splitting hairs. We're saying that they're one and the same. And the distinction which Rav Neubert pointed out, upon asking a goy to do a derabbanan, is based upon yet a different principle. It's permissible where the action that's being done is a simple malacha. Let's say, let's assume that using a telephone is the rabbanan for the moment. So you can tell a guy to pick up a telephone and make a telephone call for a mitzvahs choli, whereas you cannot tell the guy to apply certain creams which are medicinal in nature. Again, in the former case, it's a typical het of shvutz to shvutz for a mitzvah, for a hefset, and your well-being is in the same category. Whereas in the latter case, where there's exer mishum shrika samamonim, the fear is today the guy will do it for you, next week you'll do it for yourself. That's my answer to this distinction, and it's again at variance with what you'll see in Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa at the beginning of the 34th chapter, Perek Lamadalad, Ha'ora Alf. Okay. Now, it is quoted in Shulchan Aruch that it is permissible to engage in these activities which are normally prohibited for the purpose of, because for the gzeir of shrikas hamamonim, if it's for the purpose of chola she'ein bo sakon. The Ramah writes in Sif Lamed Zayin, this is in Simon Shin Chav Ches, it's a simon all about chola. V'chein im nofal lemishkav shori. A person who has just a plain mechush, he has a toothache, it hurts him a little bit, and he wants to take pills to alleviate his pain. No. He has a little bit of a running nose, and he wants to take some medicine to alleviate the condition. No. These are just called mechush bialma, as quoted in Shulchan Aruch, that expression in Sif Lamed Zayin. However, the Ramah writes, im nofal lemishkav shori, if he's in bed, if he has a fever, he's considered chol ha'shein b'sakana, then it's permissible for him to, in fact, do these actions which are medicinal in nature. So it's an interesting point, that although the Chazal did introduce gzeira, mishem shchika samamonim, don't do something because it may lead you to grinding on Shabbos, and of course grinding is not allowed save pikuach nefesh proper. Nonetheless, they relaxed this very gzeira, which is made, this gzeiras refuah, for an individual who can, honest to goodness, be categorized as a choler, even shein bo sakana. And they the gzeira is limited to what we call a mechush bialma or a mixus choli, where a person is not in that category. So paskins the Ramah in Sif Lamed Zayin. The Bir Halacha has a lengthy paragraph here, in which he quotes that many Rishonim seem to disagree, and say that, no, you may not take pills for refuah, even if you are in the category of a chole she ein bo sakana. To the contrary, that's exactly the case for which the gzeira was made, because we're afraid that because you have this status of chole she ein bo sakana, that you will take the liberty, mistakenly, of grinding it yourself the next time. So there is a position which is at variance with the Ramah, and the Bir Halacha in this lengthy paragraph doesn't take sides, but he would like individuals to be more strict, because he thinks he quotes so many Rishonim who adopt a stricter view against the Ramah. Nonetheless, it seems to me that one has a right to be lenient and follow the Ramah. And I will mention now a svara, a logical point which was advanced by certain great rabbonim, which although we don't accept it on its face as such, is used in cases of dispute as what we'll call a tsiruf or a sniff, as an additional point in arguing for leniency. And that is as follows. Let me ask the question here. There's a large audience of people in the room. When is the last time that any of the people in the audience was involved in what we call shechika samamonim, in grinding herbs or other primary ingredients in order to be able to make some kind of medicinal pill or other potion? Raise your hand, please. Are you a nurse? When did you have this last shechika samamonim? I didn't use the word dissolve. We all dissolve medicines. You take a pill and you put it in water. We're talking about taking the original primary ingredients, the herbs, and grinding them as druggists of old would know that there was grinding. That's still not the same thing if you ask me. Anyway, there's one person who raised their hand in a large audience, and I'm quibbling. even though I know who the person is, because I'm not really sure that that's really qualifying for shchikas hamamonim. Remember, if you have a pill, and you, even if you grind the pill, we have a principle called ein tochen achar tochen. That wouldn't even be a violation, technically speaking. So you have to go back to the primary ingredients. Nobody does it. Just about not. Well, nobody does it today. It was already true 100 years ago, no one was doing it, or close to it. And therefore there's a sefer called the Ktzos HaShulchan, Rabbi Avraham Chaim Noah, a great gadol of Yerushalayim of the first half of the last century. He was known, his most famous claim to fame is he was the Bar Plukta of the Chazon Ish in the Shiurim. Everyone knows this. It's all, every siddur has a Shiur of the Chazon Ish and the Shiur of Avraham Chaim Noah. That wasn't the only thing he knew about, you know. No, that's certainly what's true of the Chazon Ish. They had many other things to say in life. But he has a sefer in which he argues that perhaps we should accept such an opinion, that the Gzera shouldn't apply at all nowadays. The most posts can disagree with this for a variety of reasons. One of them is it's called a Dovah Shebeminyan. It's a Gzera of the Chazal, which was instituted years ago. And even if the reason no longer applies, the Gzera applies nonetheless. And the question is that really so, is it not so? Rav Shechter Shalita has an article in one of his a siman in one of his svarim, which he argues that perhaps we should not view this as a gzera of davar shebeminyan, which can never be modified, because this is a gzera which is going against a mitzvah, and a mitzvah is the mitzvah of feeling well on Shabbos, onik Shabbos. And he has a yesod that whenever there's a gzera which runs in counter to a mitzvah, that we cannot term it as a davar shebeminyan. But I won't go into that theory now. Just suffice it to say that when there are disputes, such as the machlokus in the Ramah, who's mekil, and others who are machmir, we have a right to introduce this as an additional facet for a lenient ruling, given the fact that there are some who deny the existence of this gzera entirely in our times. In any event, let us go back to the question of a real malacha. Can you ask a goy to do a malacha for you for the purpose of helping a cholish ein bo sakana? The answer is a resounding yes. It's a gemara mufereshes, it's in Shulchan Aruch, that all of the needs that of a cholish ein bo sakana may be done through a non-Jew on Shabbos. Hence, even if a person is a cholish ein bo sakana, his life is not in danger, you may ask a non-Jew to do whatever has to be done. To boil up hot water, which is an Issa Doraisa, to drive a car, which is an Issa Doraisa, whatever it may be. You may ask a non-Jew to take care of a chole she'ein bo sakona. That being the case, questions at the end. That being the case, it becomes critical to know who qualifies. Who is this chole she'ein bo sakona? We gave one example before of someone who's in bed. Someone who's nafal lemishkav, as the Ramah said it. Sif lamed zayim. Rav Neuwirth has an entire listing in the beginning of Perek Lamed Gimel entitled Chol Hashem Basakana. Who qualifies? So the first one is, he's in bed. Second one, he has a fever. He has a fever. But you know, he's not in bed, he's toughing it out. You know, you know how it is, he's popping Tylenol. So the fever keeps going up and down with the 4-hour cycles. But he's sick. He's sick and he's more or less confined to the house. He may tough it out and try to go to shul, you know, but he should be home, you know. That's called a chol Hashem basakon, even though he's not lying in bed as he really should be. Someone who is in such pain that his whole body feels weak, that he has a migraine headache, that's the example he gives. A migraine, he can't function normally. I don't have migraines. I'm told that just, you can't go on. You just, whether you're in bed or not in bed, it compromises your ability to function in a normal fashion. And then he has another important category, which is, you're fine, you're great, you're terrific. But if you don't take this pill, you will then become a chol Hashem basakana. This is called preventive. The same way as once you are a chol Hashem basakana, you can take the pill, so too, you may take the pill to prevent you from becoming a chol Hashem basakana. He gives examples, asthma, diabetes, arthritis, certain types of heart conditions which are not dangerous. I know there aren't any such things, but that's how he gives us an example. I'm just going to quote it from the Shemir Shabbos. Okay, certain eye infections. Then, let's not forget, a yoledes, someone who has had a baby. First week, she's considered chol Hashem Basakana. The first month, She's considered Chol HaShem Basakana automatically, just by virtue of her situation as a Kimpaturin. Automatically, she has a status. And finally, and perhaps most importantly for us, Yeled Katan, a young child. Now, what do they mean, a young child? How young is young? So believe it or not, later on, Rav Neubert has and tells you how young is young. Young is, he says, believe it, this is again, the Perek Lamed Zayin, Sif Beis, based on earlier sources, a yelad until the age of 9 or 10. So that means any child 9 or 10 who has some kind of a health issue is in the given the category of Chol HaShem Bo Sakon. So for this reason, for all these cases, it's permissible to ask a non-Jew to do whatever has to be done for his benefit on Shabbos. This is a very important halacha to know. Even though Raisa, that's correct. That's correct. However, to do a malacha d'oraisa, the Jew himself is certainly not allowed for a chol hasheh ein bo sakana. The question is, can a Jew do an isa d'rabbanan? Can it? They have to be a big bucky to know what's d'oraisa, what's d'rabbanan. That's part of the problem. But can a Jew do a malacha, which is d'rabbanan, in order to assist a chol hasheh ein bo sakana? So the general principle is no. For Sakonas Eiver, that's where Sakonas Eiver comes in. For the Shulchan Aruch, for Sakonas Eiver, it's permissible. If a limb is in danger, you cannot do a Doraisa, but you can do yourself a Derabanan. That's what's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. However, there may be a particular case in which a Jew may do a particular kind of an Issa Derabanan to say for the benefit of a Chol HaShein Bo Sakon. This is found in Siman Shin Chav Ches, Sif Yud Zayin. And that is a psak which the Shulchan Aruch seems not to accept. However, if you go back to the original sources, the primary source being the Ramban in Torah Sa'adam, it seems to be there. And that is a malacha which is done by a Jew on Shabbos, but ayidei shinui, in an abnormal fashion. In an abnormal fashion. The simple read of the Ramban is that this may be done for a Chol HaShein Bo Sakana. Shulchan Aruch seems not to be that way. Two of the great Hasidic Gedolim accepted the Ramban at face value. One is the Alta Lubavitcher Rebbe, Shulchan Aruch Harav. One is the Egle Tal, the famous Sofachev Rebbe, his classical work on Tolkien about Perfuas. They both accept that. And the Shmir Shabbos Kiel Chasa, out of deference to these Gedolim, he calls them Gedolei Aposkim, quotes both opinions in Perek Lamed Gimel, Siv Beis. The truth to tell, from the Ramban proper, you get an impression that not only is it permissible to do a, for me the Jew to do a malacha, which would otherwise be Doraisa, but I do it with a shinui, I do it with my elbow. You can't drive a car with your elbow, so forget about that one. But there's certain things that you can do with the elbow, which may be a Doraisa. You need hot water, maybe you can, you know, put the push the button on the stove with your elbow, if you or turn something between your teeth. You know, it's creative ways to do things which are bishinoi. You get an impression from the Ramban. It's preferred to do it that way than to have a guy do it in a normal fashion. Ad kedei kach. La halacha, we don't accept that. The Shemir Shabbos writes here in the footnote Yud Zayin. Because there are those who just the Shulchan Aruch doesn't seem to accept the Ramban at face value, and therefore we say as follows: a Chol HaShein Bo Sakana, the best thing to do is to have a non-Jew do whatever has to be. Not to Mefurash or Gemara or Din Shulchan Aruch. There's not even a question about that. It's called Tzorch Chol Nasdei Nochi B'Shabbos. Not even a question. If you can't find a non-Jew, there's room to be lenient and allow even a Jew to do it, yourself to do it, as long as you do it with a shinui. Again, only if he qualifies as a Chol HaShein Bo Sakona. Okay. Now, we have to discuss a number of other points, and as I was mentioning before, Rabbi Cohen asked me to leave adequate time for questions. So the I will speak for about 15 more minutes or less, and then allow at least that amount of time for questions before the next presentation. I guess the less I speak, the more questions, the more time for questions. I'll try to be as short as I can. One of the more famous questions that's raised in this regard is taking vitamins on Shabbos. Now, what's unique about vitamins, well, I'm just curious by a show of hands, how many people in this room take vitamins on a daily basis? a significant percentage. I would say about a third of the people in the room raised their hands, or maybe even more. Okay. Okay. I won't ask a personal question, but I would ask you, but I don't want to show of hands. Other people who take vitamins, how many consider yourselves, don't raise your hands, to be sick, to be in the category of a cholera? I hope the number of hands that would have been raised is much lower, because vitamins are taken by people who are healthy. The doctor says, take a vitamin. It's good for you. You know, it strengthens you. It'll make you more immune to various weaknesses. And just take vitamins. Just take it. And the question is, did the gzeira mishim shchika samamonim? Remember, the rabbis were fearful that an individual was going to get carried away with his health situation and actually grind up herbs on Shabbos in a manner which is not permissible. But there are some poskim who maintain this only applies in a situation where someone is sick. Because you know, as we're all paranoid about our health, which is, you know, it's okay. So it's good to be. One of my musa drushes I give in shul on a regular basis is, take care of your health. We already heard from the Rav Shalita that we are sometimes go to an extreme. I'll just call it from Reb Chaim Brisker. Reb Chaim Brisker was the absolute extremist when it came to questions of pikuach nefesh and cholera b'Shabbos. He was mad to everything. I mean, whatever it was. Chas v'shalom. He was. I'm sure from Reb Shech with certain coolers that he had, which are generally not accredited. Reb Chaim was tremendous. They asked him, Rebbe, you're such a big makel, Briskerov. You're such a big makel. You're so lenient when it comes to these matters. After all, it's Shabbos. It's Yom Kippur. With everybody eat Yom Kippur also. So Chaim had a typical Brisker response. He says, no, you got it all wrong. I'm not a makel in the laws of Shabbos or the laws of Yom Kippur. I'm a machmir in the laws of Pikuach Nefesh. Right? It's all the way you look at it. Chaim was a tremendous machmir. I'm a Talmud of the Rav, who was a machmir, and I'm also a machmir. Tremendous machmir, Pikuach Nefesh. We try to, and not only Pikuach Nefesh in the literal sense, but also a person should feel well, so we try to allow whatever we can allow. But what about this issue of someone who is not sick? So the Shulchan Aruch has an expression, avlam ein lo shum mechush mutter. Someone who is healthy and nothing wrong with him, he may, what? What's mutter? It's not clear. The simple read of the Shulchan Aruch, if I read it, would be, everything goes. If you're healthy, you can have anything. So you can have vitamins if you're healthy, whatever, no problems if you're healthy. The Magen Avraham disagrees. The Magen Avraham, it's quoted by the Mishnah Berurah, Kuf Chof, says no. The Hainu Sha'ochel V'Shosel L'Ra'avono U'Letzimono. All that means is you may eat and drink normally. Big mazel tov. If you're healthy, you got to eat and drink. What does that mean? That's poshut. But he says that on Hu'Osel L'Refuah. What Refuah? He's not sick. The Hainu L'Chazek Mizgo. That's vitamins to strengthen your constitution. The Magen Avraham says it's awesome. That's where the problem starts. The Magen Avraham said it's not allowed. There are those who disagree and say that it is allowed. There's a remarkable line in the Shmir Shabbos Kirchasa, which goes to I'm still going according to Rabbi Cohen's outline. The last thing there talks about band-aids and bandages, creams and ointments. So let me just finish that right now before I forget. So taking temperature is permissible because it's medida shel mitzvah. Assuming you're using a traditional thermometer. You know, the new ones I care, there's too many varieties. Creams and ointments are a problem, a double problem. There's a problem of memachek, of a malacha, of one of the 39 categories, told of memareach, memachek. On the one hand, there's also a problem of shikas samamonim, using a medicinal item, which is problematic. However, as we said before, if you're in a category of a chol eshein bo sakana, where this wound, whatever it is, prevents you from functioning normally, it's a rare case, but it can happen. Certainly in the case where there's a shail of a sakana's eva, there's some kind of danger to a limb, if you're not going to apply this, then what you should do is apply it, because there's no gzera in such a case, but you should do it in an abnormal fashion, with the back of your hand or something, to avoid the malacha problem. Again, so we should try to avoid it, but if we have to do it, we can do it. But bandages and bandages per se, with no ointments, just you got on Shabbos you got to cut, and you want to put a bandage on just to prevent infection, just to prevent germs from coming in. This is permissible. Why? You're not healing anything. All it's doing is preventing future infection. So the Shemir Shabbat has a passing comment in Perek Lamed Daled in Ha'ora, Pei Hei, just as with respect to a bandage, the prohibition does not apply if all you're doing is trying to maintain a healthy status quo of non-infection. So too, we would like to argue, there should be no prohibition against taking pills if all you're trying to do is to maintain a healthy status quo. Now, this seems to go against the Mogen Avraham. So again, it's a dispute. Some say like the Mogen Avraham, some say against the Mogen Avraham. Moshe is a long tshuva about vitamins as well. And if I tell people, if you can do without, take it before Shabbos, take it after Shabbos, or the doctor says if you take it 6 out of 7 days, you're ahead of most of my patients and you're okay. Yeah? So then it's better to avoid it on Shabbos. But if there's a real medical indication, even though the Mogen Avraham has a somewhat strict view, unless you're going to really be a Chol HaShem HaSakana, which you may take preventatively no matter what, but even if we're not at that level, there's grounds to be leaned by combining that Tosa Shulchan Svara with the Shemir Shabbos as far, there are a couple of svekas to be lenient if it's in a case in which it's really considered to be necessary. I should add that regular foods that even healthy people ingest are permissible even though you're doing it purely for a medical purpose. We talk about hot chicken soup as being the Jewish penicillin, or hot tea, things of this nature. You may not like chicken soup too much or hot tea too much, but you're doing it because you have this cold. It's permissible, because that's not considered to be medicine at all, even though we sometimes quip that it's medicine, but it's not really medicine. So that's not even under discussion. That's certainly permissible. Now, there's much more to be said, but I feel it's so critical to allow for questions that I'm going to stop now and allow for questions. If the questions go to the end, so be it. And if they don't, I have more to say afterwards. But I'll now stop and take all the questions. I know that Shu had a question first. Your hand was up first. About the grinding, sure. Do the right thing, do it before Shabbos. Grinding up medicines is not a violation of Tochen. As I said before, it's already been ground in the laboratory where it was made. Nonetheless, to create a medicine on Shabbos is a separate prohibition. And by grinding it and then putting in suspension and things of this nature, that is a separate and distinct prohibition. Moreover, I want to tell you another piece of good news, and that is that if you take a pill and put it into a suspension before Shabbos, then according to most authorities, this avoids the gzera of Shrika Sabamanim entirely, because you would make what we call a heker, something which is noticeable. And according to certain authorities, this is true even if you do this Sunday through Friday as well. As long as you took the pill and you put it in a suspension in a liquid, or as we used to do when I was young, put the aspirin in the applesauce, you know, remember that? But if you do any of these things before Shabbos, it's very likely that you have avoided the exam shrinkage of amount of entirely. So it's a good thing from that lack of respect to do such a thing. If it loses its effectiveness, then don't do it. Obviously, the case you're dealing with happens to be a child, a chola, and therefore it's permissible to do what's called medicines, and they never made a gzera of shrika saman in this case, and therefore as we have to do it as best you can. If you can take it without dissolving it, then straight will be better. It has to be dissolved, in this particular instance it's permissible. I want to say another thing. Baruch Hashem, I have a local rabbi, the many local rabbanim. I'm not here to go against any of them. I'm not here to replace them. These shaylos have to be asked to the local rabbanim. I'm just here to give an overview and guidelines, but they're always case by case nuances. Yes.
It seems that you're not taking into account the technology has changed, and she was talking about the teachers, and sometimes you do have to crush the pills that you can't do before Shabbos.
Correct. I'm taking into account technology. Crushing pills is not what the rabbis were worried about. Because as I said before, a pill was ground up already in its processing, and it's called Ein Tochen Achar Tochen. The rabbi is only concerned about crushing the primary ingredients, natural ingredients, which grow from the ground. That is not, on the contrary, precisely because of today's technology, that's almost never done in a home situation. Yes?
I know this is
going to
fall into a whole other category, and I'm not asking for thoughts, and I know people do it, but I'm just curious.
What an introduction.
I mean, I'm curious what category does, like, infertility medication contribute to fall under, because I know that those things
happen. No more introductions necessary. Okay. It's interesting. These kinds of pills, although they existed when this safe was written, I guess they weren't so well known. Rabbi Shlomo Zalman is quoted here in a case of someone who's taking a pill in the other direction of Shabbos. This is very common. Contraceptive pill. You have to take it every day. You miss a single day. And you bleed, break through, and then and the whole purpose is defeated. So he's making on that. That's not considered to be a refuah. I would suggest that the pills which are taken for fertility are certainly permissible on Shabbos for a variety of reasons. It seems to me that the person, a number of reasons that go as follows, almost contradictory. On the one hand, the person who is not able to have a child is not technically viewed as someone who is a chola. I mean, it's a sorry situation. We know we all have to go out for individuals who have these problems, but it's not technically speaking a chola on the one hand. So therefore, you have this, the head that we spoke about before. On the other hand, the need for these pills is so great, and for these treatments are so great, and we call a mitzvah rabbah, having the children, not only on the personal level, of the emotional level, but also on a halachic level. Having a child is called a mitzvah rabbah. It's hard to grade mitzvahs, but the mitzvah rabbah, the poskim say, you can sell a sefer Torah to be able to have children. And therefore, in my view, I'll tell you a chiddush of my own, which I haven't seen too many places. They have other kinds of processes nowadays which require much more than taking pills on Shabbos. All kinds of things. Well, let me give a background. There's a thing called something I have to take shots, injections. Injections, I'm not discussing intravenous, plain injections, according to most poskim, are permissible. An injection is permissible because there's no malacha. It may have a refuah problem, as we said, but beyond that, it's not. It's just injections are permissible. But more than that, there are cases where now with IVF and all kinds of other new technologies, there are cases in which either for the actual process or for the what leads up to it, they're taking very sophisticated tests which have to be done at a certain hour. In my opinion, it's permissible to have these things done by a goy on Shabbos, even if they involve a d'oraisa. Now, how can that be? What's it based upon? It's based upon, in my opinion, a Gemara in Masechta Gittin, Daf Ches, where the Gemara says that you may ask a goy to write a document on Shabbos in order to buy a land in Eretz Yisrael. And Tosfos explains, a mitzvah rabbah. Buying land in Eretz Yisrael from the goyim is a cut above somehow in the hierarchy of mitzvahs. It seems to me that Peruva was also in that mega category, and therefore it's permissible in my view. I'm going much further than in your question. I'm saying it's even permissible to have a non-Jew do certain things, which would be otherwise would be for us at the Oraisa. Once we're on this topic, I want to say something else. There are individuals who have certain situations as follows. This is a very important point. The doctor says like this: you can skip the medicine on Shabbos and you'll be okay. Just remember to take it all the other 6 days of the week. But if you don't take the medicine at all, you're dead. Or it could be in a chola sheyesh bo sakana. There's a inference from the Ramban that in such a case, a person may take the medicine on Shabbos. I want to repeat. The doctor's telling you, if you take it on Friday before Shabbos and mostly Shabbos, and you go through life this way, you'll be okay. But it's a kind of a medicine that if you'll never take it, then your life is in danger. Such a medicine, according to Ramban, may be taken on Shabbos. That's a chiddush, but I think it's true. Because we don't want to get out of our habits. First takes the medicine every single morning. Well, don't take it on Shabbos. Maybe he'll forget before Shabbos, maybe he'll forget after Shabbos. So if he says, let's say a heart condition. So you can skip here and there. People do skip here and there. But if you skip it forever, your life is in danger. In my view, in such a case, you should take it on Shabbos morning. Now, there are other cases. They're diabetics. And now diabetics these days, in their different stages, different cases, in some cases with they have to check for the pinprick and put on the plate and have a computer print out. This, of course, if the doctor insisted it be done, it must be done. Again, if it's possible to have the pinprick done, we'll call Bishinui, instead of going this way, go this way. Again, I'm not playing doctor over here. You have to ask your doctor to make sure it's safe. It should be done, although the truth is, there's not even a guarantee that it helps in the malacha of Chavala. It's not clear that the principles of Malachas Machsheva apply. It's not clear that a Shinui is effective, but some possum say it is. So that should be done by the Shinui. And I believe that the recording process of that little mini computer, which tells you what the blood sugar level is, in my view, is a derabanan. It's not meant to stay for long. It just goes, it comes and goes. And therefore, one doesn't have to sit and clear, as we'd say, is it really yesh bo sakana, ain bo sakana? In my view, if you do it with a shinui, and this is only derabanan, there's room to be lenient, even if you're not completely, even if you would know for sure that you could somehow survive till after Shabbos without taking this test. Very often, if you do that, you can't have a normal Shabbos existence. So I have a leniency as far as that's concerned as well. I'm taking more questions. Yes. We generally speaking find no distinction between the chola, him or herself, and some other Jewish person helping out. The same thing. Whatever the chola himself can do, the person helping can do, and vice versa. Differently, even though he's in good health. Right. That's good. That would person live longer. No. It seems to me that if, objectively speaking, the person due to advanced age, it just has to requires extra attention medically. But if such an age could be found, then I would say that again fits in the same category as the beginning of life, till the age of 9 and 10, and you have a guy do whatever has to be done. Yes? Right, so that, I will hold, I think Rabbi Shechtes, that's his topic. Please, don't ask me questions about Kol HaShi'esh Masakon. It's not fair to the next speaker. Yes? requires extra attention medically. But if such an age could be found, then I would say that again, if it's in the same category as the beginning of life, till the age of 9 and 10, and you'd have a guy do whatever has to be done. Yes? Right, so that, I will hold, I think Rabbi Shechtes, that's his topic. Don't ask me questions about Chol HaShiyesh Masakon. It's not fair to the next speaker. Yes? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sprays are better because there's no problem with what we call memachic. Ointments you just have to smooth out and sprays just go on like this. It's better. So it's better. But again, if it's only what we call a mechash v'alma, even if it's no malacha problem, it should be avoided in the first instance. Yeah. Again, depends how bad the mosquito bite is. If the mosquito bite is a little bit of an itch, and it's annoying a little bit, so again, if the child is under the age of 9 or 10, bingo, he's called a shembos lakon. But if he's 13 years old, he's going to have a mosquito bite, and it itches. So let it itch a little bit. That's, we have to be a little more nervous a little bit for Shabbos. But if it reaches a point that he fell asleep out in the backyard there in the summer camp and they got 150 mosquito bites and he's going, that's a different story. Yes? Yeah, well, they have these things to prevent. That's a good question. We speak about preventive. I don't think that's called a refuah at all. It seems to me it's just a repellent. A repellent, I don't know how these things work, but I think if it's just a repellent, in my view, that's not in the category of a fool whatsoever. Your body gets something which will limit the effect of the mosquito bite. It just keeps the mosquitoes away. That's not a fool at all, so I think that's permissible.
Spray.
Spray. Not lotion. Lotion's a relative problem. Spray. Yes. You don't have to say anything. I know what you're talking about. Someone is a pikuach nevesh for the shidduch. That no, that's not a joke. There's what he said. This really also belongs to Rav Shechter's domain. Is it a pikuach nevesh or not? The preferred way to handle it, as we said before, is to have a non-Jewish plastic surgeon who the community is familiar with, and whatever these things happen on a regular basis. And he's called in to do what has to be done on Shabbos. If, of course, there's any kind of a danger, and an argument can be made in many of these cases that if you have to stitch it up, it's dangerous, because if you won't stitch it, there'll be possibilities of infection. An infection, if untreated, could be life-threatening. You know, I don't want to have doomsday scenarios, but I'm a machmir pikuach nefesh, as I said before. So in those cases, I think there's room to be lenient. Let me go to the men's section now. Yes, Dr. Simon. Okay, a good point. A good point. Yes.
Yeah, well, this is for a chapter here. I mentioned the category of possible loss of a limb. Maybe that would be not okay, but we still could be doing some right in the neck. We'll learn more about that.
Yeah, well, I said, according to the straight Shulchan Aruch, it's permissible in that case, is of course to have a non-Jew do whatever has to be done. A Jew can certainly, we would assume, can certainly do any derabbanan. Whether a Jew can do a d'oraisa, that's what's under discussion. I will add that there are many cases in which a sakonas eva poses a threat, although remote, to one's life. Now, the poskim say, based on the Gemara, that in holchem b'pikuach nevesh achar harov, you don't have to have a 50% chance of mortality to invoke the heter of pikuach nevesh. That really is the next speaker's domain. But I would say if it's a 0.01% chance or more of chalila mortality, that's already enough to allow you to do whatever has to be done on Shabbos. Beyond that, you can't cross the street almost. But As I wanted to say. Yes.
What if you said you could do something to prevent getting sick if someone has a condition, but what if someone does have a condition, they say, well, I think I might be getting sore throat that has to do with these strep or our cousins are taking something that's like mineral water, infused water or something like that, something that's more.
Well, I'm not going to get involved in homeopathic medicine, but in principle, if you have something which works, which prevents you from getting strep, that's permissible, because strep is potentially life-threatening. And I should add, once we're talking about strep, you're on a strep 10-day, 10 days of medicine for antibiotics. And if you skip a day, don't skip a day. That's what the Ramban had before. If you don't take the strep at all, I'm told, if you don't take the medicine, the Khalid, the strep could be fatal. So you therefore, on the basis of the Ramban, you can take your antibiotics regularly on Shabbos. My guess, I'm not a physician, the most antibiotic prescriptions for, we'll call, very good question, huh? That's an intelligent question. You have to know the Gemara Masechta the Beitza, Nafchav Beis. There the implication is that these gzeiros of refuah simply do not apply to the second day of Yontif and Chutz Laaretz. Rosh Hashanah is an exception, perhaps. But they don't apply to all these restrictions that we had of for the gzeiros Shikas HaMamonim do not apply, we assume, on the second day of Yontif Sheni Shalgolius. Yes? Oh, very easy way to get around lotion problem with a diaper rash. Simple. The baby's a baby. It's a cholo shein mo sakona. Take the cream. Wow. Yeah. Close the diaper, and the rest will happen naturally. I'm speaking from many years of experience. You know, that is a shinui in a sense. I mean, but it's not heta shinui, it's heta gummer. You know, to smooth it out with your own hands, that would be a problem. But there's no need to. It happens by, I give you my word, it happens by itself. Yeah, but I'm saying that's not necessary. It's not necessary. I'm telling you, it'll happen by itself. Yes, Rabbi. Oh, an eye, it says in Shulchan Aruch, that sakonas eber of an eye is pikuach nefesh, automatic. You have to know exactly the case. You finish with the diaper. Many people have a habit of taking the diaper off, folding it up, and then just to keep the fold in place, to put the tape back down. And the Rebbe Shlomo Zalman said that's a question of a possible d'oraisa, because that's a permanent adhesion. Even though it's going to end up in a landfill, but it's a permanent adhesion, as opposed to the removal of the tape from the tab initially, which is started off being only temporary and now only temporary, so therefore that's more lenient. Since Rav Shechter Shlita has come, I'll stop, and I thank you very much for your kind attention.
To take, just in case people for whatever reason need a break, for just 3 minutes, in about literally 3 minutes, not longer than that, we're going to Rav Shechter is going to begin.